And if you're on Amazon and you're searching for a product and you're clicking through the pictures whenever you get to the product, if it doesn't tell you on any of those pictures the actual supplement facts panel, or doesn't tell you who actually manufactures the product, that is a big red flag.
Supplements are everywhere, whether it's a daily multivitamin or a personalized probiotic. With nearly 75% of Americans taking one every day, their popularity has become undeniable. However, despite the boom of this trend, there are still questions to be answered around all things supplementation. To break it all down, I'm joined by Dr. Douglas Coleman, a PhD registered dietitian nutritionist and clinical researcher who's been leading supplement trials since the early 90s. In this episode, we dig into the science, myths, and regulations behind supplements, plus how to interpret supplement labels like a pro. Let's get things going with our myth-busting minute. Supplements are biologically active, and they do sometimes interact with other supplements and medications too. For example, vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, but it doesn't just flow through you and do nothing. Actually, at high levels, vitamin C can sometimes cause GI issues and cramping and other intestinal disturbances. And it's also worth noticing that a change in urine color, like bright yellow, it doesn't mean that the supplement is just going through you and not being absorbed. That's a common misconception. When you take certain vitamins, like B vitamins, for example, it might turn your urine bright yellow or even neon, but that doesn't mean that it's doing nothing and you're just urinating it out. Actually, there are things happening inside biologically. So the bottom line here is talk to your doctor or registered dietitian before testing the waters to see if supplements that you're taking could interact with any of your medications, and just making sure that you're taking the right dose. You need to be safe and consult the experts. Welcome, Dr. Coleman. To kick things off, can you give us your background in supplements and clinical nutrition?
I was an athlete growing up. I was curious about a few different things. I was curious, why did it seem that there was a connection in between what you ate and heart disease and what you ate and cancer? And then at the same time, I was a wrestler amongst the sports I did, that I can manipulate my body weight depending upon what I ate, how much I ate, how little I ate, or what type of foods I ate. And that got me interested in the overall field of nutrition. And I started getting interested in, well, if there is disease that we get from what we eat, and we can also use foods to recover from disease, medical nutrition therapy, then what is the connection, or what's missing that's driving some of the poor health conditions? And so that started my interest as part of nutrition and eventually becoming a registered dietitian in dietary supplements as an aspect of health promotion, if you will.
What do you think is most misunderstood about supplement science?
Dietary supplements, these are food ingredients, right, that are derived from carbohydrates, proteins, fats, botanicals. So if you think of it in that way, adding spice while you're cooking is supplementing the food with the phytochemicals that naturally occur in sage or rosemary or whatever else. When you're cutting up various colorful vegetables, you're getting the polyphenols and other flavonoids and other antioxidant phytonutrients, and you're adding them, supplementing them to your diet. Yes, those are coming through food, but when you're going into the spice sector, as an example, those are powders that we're adding on or leaves that we're adding on that are also used in supplement form. So there's been ways of supplementing the diet with nutrition going back to Hippocrates.
Right. A lot of people don't understand like what falls into the supplemental category.
I am of the purview that if you ask a person, do you take, you know, purposely take a dietary supplement, they're going to think a multivitamin, a fish oil, or something in a pill or a powder form. But they're not recognizing that when they're getting their bread, right, or when they're getting their rice, or when they're getting cereals and a variety of other foods, that foods are either fortified or enriched. And that process of fortification or enrichment, they are both supplementing the nutrient value of that food or food stuff. Right. When it comes to fortification, it's adding and putting extra. And when it comes to enrichment, sometimes it's adding back what was taken away during the manufacturing process. And I'll even give a real world food example. The way that the food law works, when you buy, let's say, orange juice, it says I'll make up 90 milligrams of vitamin C per serving. the way that the law works is that to be true to label, at the end of shelf life, that amount needs to be still detectable in a serving of the orange juice. So what beverage companies do, because the minute you open up an orange juice, even if it's in a refrigerator, air starts to get to it. So oxidation of antioxidants occur. There's a concomitant lowering of vitamin C content on a daily basis after it's opened. So they put in what's known as overage. So if I put in right now, the first serving may have 200 milligrams of vitamin C per serving. But by the time you get to the bottom, and if it was the shelf life that's on expires by, you're going to get at most that. So that's supplemental because that's fortifying it so that it'll meet a label claim. And the other topic that I bring up as related to this, it is standard of care in medicine. When infants are born in hospitals, that infants are given typically two vitamins within the first 2 days of birth. They're given a vitamin K injection, and that's not even testing them if they were insufficient or deficient. It's a standard of care for a variety of reasons.
You mentioned labels, though, and I think that's a really important point. So there's nutrition facts labels, like you're mentioning on food. There's also dietary supplement labels. Can you walk me through the difference and some of the development there over time?
We have a nutrition facts panel, which we find on foods, and you have a supplement facts panel that we find on dietary supplements. By law, these labels have to be on the product in order, for a number of reasons, to clarify to the consumer what it is, and then also to tell the consumer what's in the product, and then certain mandated aspects. So it tells the consumer what is the product, how much is the serving, what is the actives in the product, if you will, and a whole bunch of other mandated information.
There is this rhetoric out there that I hear a lot, which is, you know, supplements aren't regulated, so they're not really safe. And I hear people say that and I push back every time. How do you approach that and how would you myth bust?
Frequently hear the same commentary or question. So the regulatory framework for dietary supplements falls under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. The specific act which made dietary supplements an FDA regulated commodity, if you will, is the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, which was signed into law by Congress and the President in 1994. So there is regulations that are on the books. Now, as related to this, in 1969, the Food and Drug Administration actually established good manufacturing practices, which is codified in the Code of Federal Regulations, which were the basis for food manufacturing. Dietary supplements are regulated as a subset of foods, food ingredients. For dietary supplement ingredients to also be in part compliant with Part 117, which is hazard analysis and risk-based preventive controls and to help prevent unwanted pathogens from getting in a product. The FDA does their part of this regulation by ongoing monitoring of manufacturers globally, not only in the U.S., so manufacturing that occurs in China, occurs in Spain, the FDA has representatives that go and audit those facilities as well. And honestly, the FDA audits maybe 3 to 5% of all of manufacturing facilities, not much more on the pharmaceutical side. So FDA regulations have been in place, and it's up to any manufacturer, pharmaceutical, food, beverage, cosmetic, that they are following the good manufacturing practices guidelines or laws by the FDA, and that if they do, then the products will meet the federal quality and safety standards.
Fuel your day with Orgain's organic plant-based protein powder. With 21 grams of smooth plant-based protein and no added sugar, it's a delicious way to support your goals, whether you're blending up a morning smoothie or adding a boost to your baking. It's certified organic, vegan, gluten-free, and crafted without any artificial ingredients, just clean goodness in every scoop. I've been lucky enough to be able to do some tours of supplement factories where they're making these products. And it is so amazing. Like my experience has been going in, I mean, you are fully gowned up. You're in a factory. You have to wash your hands and put booties on your shoes. It is so, so regulated. And I feel very comfortable taking quality supplements from companies that I trust. What's your experience been?
My experience has been the same. And this is very helpful for, of course, public health. And it would be great if there was more education videos where there was tours that people could go see what goes into new manufacturing, not just the laws, like see how the quality, see everything's done.
Yeah, I wish everybody could see that. So saying that it's unregulated or not safe is not true. However, they are self-regulating in some ways while following some of the rules. One thing that I like to do is look for third-party testing labels on supplements. Can you walk me through that and whether you think all supplements are safe?
I have a couple of rules of thumb when people ask me, what should I buy? And part of that is assuming that the person might have a little bit of knowledge or helping them. Brands that have been around for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 plus years, right, are not doing fly-by-night shady stuff. They're remaining in business. So there's a quality aspect. Of course, if somebody's into doing searches, you can look at Better Business Bureau. You can even look at Amazon reviews. You mentioned the words kind of self-governing. And there are third-party certification audits that are offered by a variety of groups, such as the NSF or the Clone List or Informed Sport. And all of them basically do the audits to the international levels called the ISO standards, along with the FDA GMP standards, for making sure that the manufacturing is all meeting all the specs and all the regulations. Is what's on the label is what's in the product. And so you could find on a variety of products certain third-party seals that might say NSF certified or might be BSBG, Banned Substance Control Group, also offers the standards that are used. So third-party seals are another way of getting consumer confidence or the consumer having confidence that not only is this company doing their own checks, paying a lot of money for somebody else to come audit them, and they don't always pass audits, right? Sometimes there's deficiencies that occur. And then you can't get the seal or the certification without passing the audit. And so those have great worth. A fear I have is sometimes consumers are led by price, right? And so I'm going to name it just because it's the biggest in the room would be Amazon. Because on a lot of third-party sellers' sites like that, they're not always tested by Amazon or others for meeting label standards and quality. And so those often are the ones that end up in class action lawsuits and other things and have the legal problems. But so don't always chase the dollar. If something is not telling you what's in the product, who manufactures it, who's the company that actually sells it, then those are not ones that I would ever recommend.
So I actually wanted to loop back and talk a little bit about marketing. You've mentioned it before, but what other red flags do you see with like supplements and marketing language?
A red flag that's also within the Code of Federal Regulations, meaning not allowed, are any claims that are implied or direct regarding diseases or conditions. So I see red flags all the time surrounding implied or direct claims, you know, usually about blood sugar control, some things in the cognitive space, and things that are marketed for sex, things that are marketed for weight loss have been found to also have some unsafe medicines in it. So those are products that are more in corner stores, on the internet, where you can get FDA warning letters, FDA memorandums that have gone out and where companies have done recalls because it's been found that they had stimulants in it. And so those are risky for health. And the best thing to do is if you're interested in learning more about dietary supplement for a purposeful reason, meet with a health professional that's well-versed in evidence-based information and can synthesize what the data shows.
100%. If I have somebody coming to me for weight loss, I'm never going to be like, take this supplement. Instead, it's going to be working on all the other things. Like, that's not the approach that most healthcare providers are going to take.
That's good. Responsible healthcare providers don't do that because there's been a past history in industry and dietary supplements being marketed as weight loss in a pill. And we have learned that weight management is multifactorial. Dietary supplements can play a role. Currently, dietary supplements play a great role in support of quality nutrition intake for people, let's say, that are on the GLP-1 agonists. Because anybody that are taking that class of medicines, you know, whatever brand's product, GLP-1 agonist, they typically end up with the equivalent of either a very low calorie diet or a low calorie diet. And so therefore, you're not going to get a lot of vitamins, minerals, essential amino acids, proteins, essential fatty acids, fiber, probiotic-based foods. So there's nutrient gaps that are being addressed by the supplement industry responsibly, with medicine, data shows that the evidence-based approach leads to a more healthier weight loss and weight loss journey, as they talk about it these days.
I wanted to wrap this up by talking about the best-selling supplements that you see that you're excited about.
I always believe that your goal should dictate your strategy. If we're talking in general, and we're talking about for health promotion, if you will, I would like to mention a few. A multivitamin, multimineral, an omega-3 or essential fatty acid. One of the things that's interesting is I'm very excited, pentadecanoic acid, which is a fatty acid known as C15, and a new area of research is emerging related to cognitive health and cardiovascular, also for C15 intake, which we get through dairy and a few other foods. So that's an emerging ingredient that excites me. But if we're talking, again, a multivitamin with minerals, a good quality omega-3 type product, creatine monohydrate. Now, creatine, I mentioned as also as being the single ingredient that is the fastest growing in the female population. So creatine is actually can be produced in the brain by cells in the brain by itself and is utilized for energy in the brain. It's not only for muscles, but creatine in females is very exciting. So I hope that gives you a few.
Creatine, super exciting research coming out. I'm seeing it used a lot for my female clients. I'm doing a lot of single agent work, like vitamin D is a huge one. I also am been really intrigued by personalizing calcium supplementation recently. And then I would put omega-3s on my radar also.
Nutrition is really important for the whole life cycle. And supplements have a definitive role.
Supplements can be confusing, but with experts like Dr. Coleman guiding the conversation, we can break through the noise together. From understanding how supplements are regulated to spotting red flags on labels, I hope this episode helped clarify some of your biggest questions surrounding the supplement industry. In part two, we'll explore who really needs supplements, the most common deficiencies Dr. Coleman and I see in practice, and how to use testing and personalization to support long-term health. Don't miss it.